The following podcast is brought to you by BetDSI.com. The NFL and college seasons are heating up, so what are you doing on the sidelines? Get in the game with BetDSI. They've been paying winners for 20 years now, and with a reputation for great service and fast payouts, it's easy to know why BetDSI is the place to play, win, and get paid. Anytime, anywhere. BetDSI has every wager you could ever imagine, whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, UFC, esports, global sports. I mean, if it's happening, BetDSI is putting a line on it. You can even bet on politics and celebrities. Plus, you can bet live with BetDSI's live betting option. So stop hanging out on the sidelines and get started with BetDSI. You'll get some extra bang for your buck right now, too. BetDSI is offering you podcast listeners an extra 25% bonus, but only when you use the promo code WIN125. Don't leave your money on the table. Use promo code WIN125 and get the special podcast listener 125% bonus. Just visit BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code WIN125. Don't stand on the sidelines. To win it, you have to be in it. Visit BetDSI.com right now. That's BetDSI.com. Promo code WIN125.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And we have returned again with the Monday Night Delight. Carla Dawson, I'm David Gao, and we've got Jose behind the glass. Welcome in, everyone.
Welcome, welcome. Good to be here. Big weekend. Loved it.
Big weekend. We are still in that moment when there's so much going on in the world of sports. World Series behind us, but college basketball about to kick off.
Preview tomorrow night. Here we go.
Yeah, so we can add that into the mix with all things happening, and we do sit here on a Monday night, a big Monday night matchup, at least a big one for the Titans and the Cowboys.
Someone's going to be 500 at the end of tonight.
Well,
is it going to be your boys?
Needs to be. I'll tell you what about the Cowboys. It's early always to say it's a must win, but it feels like a must win, particularly when they gave up the draft capital to bring in Amari Cooper and make the statement that they think they have a team that can make the playoffs this year. And a number one said we're going to bet on that. And that was a big, big-time bet. They need to make it pay, and they need to start tonight.
Well, Amari Cooper's super happy after watching his former team get beat up by Nick Mullen, mighty Nick Mullen, in the San Francisco 49ers.
Nick Mullen, you mean the next Tony Romo?
The second coming of Brett Favre?
No, yeah. The second coming of Tony Romo. I know he went to college with Brett Favre, or the same college, but I'm saying he looks to me like the next Tony Romo, an undrafted free agent from a nondescript football program. And he had that same throwing motion. He lit up the place. He's the second coming of Tony Romo. Of course, if all goes well for the 49ers, next year Garoppolo will be back in charge and we'll never see Nick Mullens again.
Well, that's not nice to Nick.
No, it's not nice to Nick.
Maybe he fires it up this year and you trade him for a good draft pick next year. Who knows? Best case scenario, right?
But what does this do to C.J. Beathard? That's the question. He's the middleman now.
See how quickly she sucked us into that Bay Area football over there.
Absolutely. I waste no time.
See ya, CJ.
See ya, CJ.
He's got nothing there, right? He's done. I mean, okay, next year it'll be Garoppolo with Mullens as the backup. That's not a bad picture, actually, for the 49ers.
No, it's not. They discovered a little shimmer of hope there.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. All right, when we come back, we'll give you an update on Monday Night Football about to kick off, and we'll also take a quick look at the games on Saturday. Alabama with a dominating win and many others with big wins. Saturday's highlights coming up next when we return on The Boss and the Gloss.
Guys, the holidays are quickly approaching. Don't wait until the last minute to get a gift. Head over to giftingmap.com today. Giftingmap.com. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, on a big Monday night where the Cowboys will face the Titans in Dallas, where they have been pretty strong at home, we're going to talk college football for a minute. A really fun Saturday. obviously, it started at the top, Alabama over LSU, and what everyone was hoping would be a really exciting game. I don't know that I'd call it exciting, but it was a big win for Alabama. They had not played anybody of that level.
Right. I mean, they've been known as having a pretty soft schedule, and this was probably going to be their, I would say, their toughest competition all season until they get to the SEC championship game, which they're going to be facing Georgia on December 1st. But I think what was more telling than saying, yep, Alabama is that dominant, we already know that.
Yeah.
I think it's LSU is really one-sided.
Right.
They did not play complimentary football. Their defense is outstanding. They held Alabama to 16 points at the half. That's impressive.
It's impressive, particularly when your offense is doing three and outs the whole way.
Exactly. But that offense, it's not happening under quarterback Joe Burrow. It's not. He couldn't make anything happen with his legs. It was really a stagnant offense, and that has to change. It's not, you're not going to be able to get past the real powerhouses in the Power Five conferences with that type of an offense.
No, so LSU falls. They're really not in consideration. They will not win the SEC championship, but they won't go to that game. They're really out of the hunt. And this is something about a week ago we just envisioned would take place. LSU surprised a couple people, had a nice win over Georgia, but their season now a good season, but not an exceptional, certainly not a college football playoff season.
No, and I think the message to LSU is a lights-out defense is not enough.
Right.
It's not enough to compete.
Right.
So it's going to win you some games, but not the big ones.
So Alabama on their way, Georgia with a big win over Kentucky, and that's a quality win.
It's a, who would have thunk?
I mean, that's a, yes, Kentucky was is a very good team this year.
Like, let's talk about how good it is to be at Kentucky. Tomorrow night, they open up, you know, with college basketball.
Yes.
The number one seed, or number two seed. Number two or number one?
I think they are number two.
Number two?
Yep.
And
Kansas
then here's
is number one right now.
Here's football, you know, facing Georgia with number nine in the nation.
Yep.
With a really, they have not, up until the Georgia game, had been able to hold opponents to under 20 points a game. That's impressive.
Well, and credit Georgia. I mean, that's a good win, a quality win. They needed that win. They will go to the SEC championship game. They'll face Alabama there.
Yes,
and at
will.
That point, see, at that point, assuming Alabama wins, then Georgia picks up its second loss, and that probably eliminates Georgia from the college football playoff.
Now, you're jumping ahead.
All right, well, maybe they'll have the upset over Alabama.
Well, it'll be interesting because it's going to be teacher and pupil again, just like the national championship game last year with Kirby Smart, head coach of Georgia. You know, was under Nick Saban for years.
For years.
So, you know, that the national championship game was exciting last year, and it probably wouldn't have ended up with an Alabama win had Nick Saban not made the bold move of pulling out his freshman quarterback after the half. If you remember, that was crazy.
Well, this year he'll have Tua in from the very beginning of the
yes,
game.
Yes, he will. A one and a Tua. But, you know, it was great for Georgia, not only not only a statement win against really a formidable Kentucky team, but they found their running game.
Yes.
I mean, with Swift and Holyfield, that was insane. 156 yards for Swift, 115 for Holyfield. That's nice. That's going to do them some good.
All right. The game I found most exciting, though,
I know what you're going to say,
was actually a Big 12 game.
Yeah.
It was West Virginia over Texas. Now, I instinctively would root for the University of Texas living in Houston, but what an exciting game. I mean, Will Grier lit it up. To me, that pass at the end of the game to Bennett was out of this world. If you notice, it looked like he was looking
on
mid-range.
On the two-point conversion.
Well, no, I'm before
that. Oh, you're before that.
To score the touchdown to get to the two-point conversion. It looked like he was looking mid-range. There's about 20 seconds left, and he saw his receiver Jennings breaking deep, and sort of at the last minute he threw it, and he threw it perfectly right in the spot it needed to be, and that gave them the chance to go for the two-point conversion, which was just amazing. And Holgorsen's decision to go. I mean, that West Virginia finale was exceptional.
Okay. You mentioned Holgorsen's decision to go.
Yes.
That was super gutsy. Because really, it's not like just a game. And it's in Austin. You know,
right.
It's in Darrell K. Memorial Stadium. And it's a Big 12 championship on the line. And possibly a playoff spot if West Virginia loses this. And, you know, they won 42-41 because that two-point conversion was successful and that gutsy call went. And, you know, Dana Holgorsen, I saw this happening live during the game. He said to his team, do you want to win this game? Let's go win it. I mean, he had no hesitation about making that call. And when you look at what Sam Ellinger did, you know, I think Dana Holgorsen said, no way do I want to face these guys in overtime.
Right.
We're in Austin. You know, Ellinger held his own, 354 yards, three touchdowns, turnover free for the eighth straight game. You don't want it to come down to that. And he's got a formidable quarterback in Will Grier, obviously, that he trusts immensely. But, wow, I don't know that I would have made that call. I want to say that I would have. In hindsight, looking back on it, oh, sure, I would have. But, man, in the moment.
And he's willing to make it more than once, too, which is all the more impressive, right?
Right.
No, impressive. I'll say this. I'm so impressed with Ellinger. Has really become that Texas quarterback that they've been looking for year after year after year since probably Colt McCoy. But their defense just did not show up again, and that's the really tough thing to swallow. I might even point out, I mean, that last touchdown pass from Greer to Jennings, the one thing you tell your safeties is don't let anyone get behind you in that situation. Remember, West Virginia had to get a touchdown, so you guard the end zone, and they let him get over the top.
No, you're right, and you bring up, you know, it's a message to defensive coordinator Todd Orlando with Texas. You know, here you go. The defense is way too porous, especially on the run. You look at the West Virginia had 578 yards. 232 were on the ground.
Amazing.
Okay, that's not okay.
Nope.
I mean, that, oh, man. It's just, and so here
and that
look
sets
at,
up Will Grier to do anything else he wants to do, and he's got a great arm.
I mean, Texas is going to be, they're going to be fine. They're on the right track.
Yeah, they're better. They're not back, but they're better.
They're better. And, you know, you look at the final score of that game, 42-41. But also, I would say to Tom Herman, the clock management was a little tricky at the end because Texas scored, went ahead with 2.5 minutes left on the clock. You cannot give that kind of time to a Will Grier run offense. Mountaineers are powerful.
They pay the price. So the other big matchup in the Big 12 was Oklahoma beating Tech. It was not easy. I mean, Murray made a couple of mistakes early, and then Oklahoma got in sync, and they were able to pull away. But that does set up Oklahoma and West Virginia, assuming they can continue to win, to play late in the regular season. And then if they, well, depending on how things turn out, they might have to play again 8 days later in the Big 12 championship. But it does seem now Oklahoma and West Virginia are on a collision course for the Big 12 championship. Mm-hmm.
And the Big 12, I think they might end the season kind of unhappy again. You know, for years they were just missing getting into the playoff, the 14 playoff, and it was they didn't have a conference championship. So now they've added a 13th game, and if it comes down to looking like you just described, I mean, they may miss college football playoffs again.
Imagine, even if one player wins out, and Oklahoma, say, is a one-loss team, Big 12 champion, they still might not get in. But imagine if Oklahoma and West Virginia have to play each other twice. It's hard for any one team that quality to win back-to-back against another quality team. So then if they split, obviously all is lost for the Big 12 and the college football playoff. The Big 10, though, Michigan with a signature win. I really thought that Penn State game was going to be close. When we've looked at Michigan, we've known they had to overcome Penn State. They have to overcome Ohio State down the stretch. And they made Penn State look like the easy one.
And it was going to be a shutout. And right inside of 2 minutes to go in the game, Penn State ends up scoring to avoid a shutout for the first time since 2001.
Yep.
Michigan sent a message. Like, we know. I mean, you know from watching them. Their defense is incredible. But quarterback Shea Patterson, he's finding his groove. This is bad for everybody else in college football. And Ohio State better watch it because that's the one of the last big games that they've got before the end of the season. We know the defense is dominant, and now the offense is really coming into its own. Michigan is trending upward.
Well, and at this point, it looks like they can defeat Ohio State, and then they go to the Big Ten championship, presumably against someone like Northwestern, and they're on their track. I mean, you can go back to where we were last week. LSU falls out of our new top four. Mm-hmm. Michigan is in there, along with Notre Dame and LSU and Alabama. I mean, Clemson and Alabama. All those things seemingly have lined up pretty well for Michigan now.
What's interesting, though, is, yes, Northwestern right now would be who Michigan, if they are the ones who went out in their division, that's who they would see. Northwestern gave Notre Dame a run to it until the fourth quarter, the very end of the game. So, you know, maybe they've got something more to it, or I don't know.
Well, Notre Dame's just got a cupcake schedule.
I think
they're more pretender than contender. Look, everybody wants them to be good. I think it's great for college football when Notre Dame is good. But really, they haven't. They had the one good win early in the season. They now sit here with, I guess, Syracuse and some soft
USC.
And USC, which is not the team that it could have been.
No, that's right. And keep in mind, and this is another reason, the Big 12, if they get pushed out of the playoff picture again and Notre Dame happens to get in, they actually have some grounds to be upset because Notre Dame doesn't play in a conference championship because they're not in a conference. So they won't. They don't have a 13th game. So that's going to be a tricky thing too. But, you know, against Northwestern, they needed a touchdown with less than 3 minutes to go in the game to seal that win against Northwestern.
It just should not be that close, one would think.
But at this point, I think everyone's so enamored with Notre Dame and what they're doing is that they just need to win. It doesn't matter how ugly the win is, how close the win is. They just need to win.
Borrow your phrase, just win, baby.
Just win,
there it
baby.
Is. That's Notre Dame.
Go, Al.
All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears to the NFL. We've got the Titans and the Cowboys about to kick off. We'll give you an update from Jerry World, how the Cowboys and Titans will fare when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
When it comes to vehicle safety, having poor visibility is a risk not worth taking. Visit your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store during the See Better, Drive Safer sale. You'll find deals on name brand headlights, wiper blades, and everything you need to help you see better. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, this just in from Jose behind the glass. He's got a report that the New Orleans Saints are looking for wide receiver depth. And one of the guys they're going to bring in and take a close look at is none other than Dez Bryant.
Dezzy B.
We've been wondering, where is he?
Big Easy.
Where is he? I mean, the one thing that's sort of notable is that Cowboys, of course, released him. He offered to come back, and then at the point, the Cowboys decided that the differential between Amari Cooper and Dez Bryant was worth a number one pick. I mean, the Cowboys went out, got Amari for a first-round pick. They were that sure they didn't want Dez to come back. That's certainly a statement. And as we talked at the trading deadline, there have been all these wide receivers on the move, from Demaryius Thomas to Golden Tate to Amari Cooper.
Big wide receiver
people moves. Giving up draft currency for them.
But nothing near a first-rounder.
Nothing near a first-rounder if you want to rub in the Cowboys point. But still, third-round picks, fourth-round picks, anybody could have had Dez for just money, and nobody took him.
I know. I think that's fascinating. But I'm glad he's getting a look. I want to see him back in the league. To me, it's more exciting when Dez is in the game.
Well, Jose has pointed out that if he signs with the Saints, week 13, the Saints will face the Cowboys on Thursday Night Football. And remember, Dez said when he was released, he wanted to sign with an NFC East team so he could get payback on the Cowboys. Well, it won't be NFC East, but it will be with a team where he could come back and show up the Cowboys.
There might be more than cell phones hidden underneath those goalpost pads.
There might well be. A little gunfire.
Machetes,
right?
Yeah,
machetes.
Exactly.
And he's going to come to bear. Well, the Cowboys and the Titans have kicked off. There's just over 8 minutes remaining in the first quarter, and it seems the Cowboys' defense is lighting it up. DeMarcus Lawrence with a strip sack, and he knocked the ball down on the ground. He's getting pressure early on, and that put the ball on the ground. And it does appear the Cowboys have recovered in Titan territory. So a big turnover with Sean Lee on the recovery on behalf of the Cowboys.
There you go. That's your guy.
How about them? Well, let's go back for a minute. We were talking about the worst team in the NFL. What is the worst team in the NFL? And there was a little window on Thursday night when the Raiders had that ignominious loss. They lost to the 49ers and the great Nate Mullins, the second coming of Tony Romo.
Nick Mullins. Nate is with the other team we were talking
well,
about.
Talking about Nate Biederman too.
In the Buffalo Bills.
No, it was Nick Mullins
but
and the 49ers.
You could mix those two and probably have quite a combo.
Well, now, so Nick is 1-0. I mean, his career's on the trajectory up. Well, I'm not going to say he's a Nate. He's a Nick.
He is definitely not a Nate, and God bless him that he's not. Let me just say.
Yeah.
Nick Mullins, you know what his QBR was after Thursday Night Football? After the 34-3 beatdown of my boys in black.
Yes.
152. It's almost perfect. Okay. That's the most productive NFL debut since the merger in 1970.
Amazing.
And only my boys, I'm going to call him Santa Claus from Oakland, could gift that to an undrafted free agent from Southern Mississippi. You're welcome.
So you're saying this outcome was due to a bad defense, not a great quarterback.
It was due to a Raider team. Like, let me just say, I just decided that I was getting so depressed watching that game.
Yeah.
That I wanted the cameraman just to go into the stands to Raider Nation, because there's more fight in those stands than what they were putting on that field.
Fair enough.
Aye, aye, aye.
I will note, shortly after the game, they released defensive end Bruce Irvin, who is famous for a couple things.
Yes, he is.
But one of which was his quote when he has been featured on a He Said, She Said segment.
Yes, he has.
That's a big deal.
Star of the show here.
So his point was, after a loss, they all asked, how do you feel after this loss? What are you going to do? And he said, well, I'm going to go home to my wife and we're going to go make a baby. Isn't that what he said?
Make babies.
Oh, babies.
Plural.
Yeah, it was after they lost in Mexico, wasn't it?
Yes.
In London. In London.
Yeah, London.
Okay, one of those foreign places. We're almost in the same place. But he decided that was the way he handled the loss. He went home to his wife and everything would work out.
He's got a lot of time to make babies right now.
Now he's got a lot of time for baby making because he's out of the NFL. I think someone's going to pick him up off of waivers. Because he's a guy who has produced in the NFL. In fact, there were some waves of criticism again at Gruden. Why did you release what might have been your best defensive pass rusher post Khalil Mack? I mean, there he is. Why did the Raiders let him go?
It's a money thing. He was due $9 million. They weren't using him in the schemes that they had. I mean, he had nine plays the other night against the 49ers. So if you're not using a guy with that kind of money, he's aging. And, you know, there's a lot of criticism of John Gruden, no doubt. And for me, you know, a princess of darkness to watch that game on Thursday was really a gut punch. But weirdly, I have faith in John Gruden that he knows what he's doing. This doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel like what Raider Nation deserves. I mean, this is it for them before they say goodbye to Las Vegas.
Yep.
And it's just tough. But you know what? You have to go rock bottom, which they pretty much are, if you saw that Thursday night football game, to start to rebuild. And it's not going to be rebuilt in a year. It's going to be a couple years. But John Gruden is a brilliant football mind. And I've got to believe he's going to move this franchise in the right direction.
And Gruden, we trust. You've heard it from the Princes of Darkness. Well, it's notable. I mean, he is stockpiling picks. That whole notion of tanking, a word you really didn't hear in anything other than the NBA.
That's right.
Has found its way. Well, we talked about
baseball.
It in MLB a little while back, and now we're talking about it certainly in the NFL and the Raiders. By trading off good players and amassing picks, they certainly seem to be poised in this window of tanking. But let's go to the good game, though. The New Orleans Saints and the Rams, a marquee matchup, prolific offenses, so much firepower. It looked like both teams were sort of a modern-day best show on turf, right? These guys really could light it up. Fun to see, well, both their coaches.
Super Seans.
What you might call the Super Seans. Yes, I mean, those two call games masterfully, and they've got all the weaponry to make it happen.
And they both have outstanding relationships with their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's key.
Yep.
And, Sean Payton has not developed Drew Brees, but he has definitely expanded and improved upon what was already a great quarterback in him. But you look at that game really did live up to its billing. I wouldn't say the same with New England. Green Bay didn't really live up. But the Saints-Rams game, 970 total yards of offense, 80 points.
Amazing.
I mean, that is fun.
My home life over-under bet I made with my son. I said it was going to be 80 was the number.
Did you?
And we got it on the number, but I thought it was going to go over.
Well, you are in fuego because you nailed that. That was perfect.
Well, the thing you mentioned, I mean, yes, look, Sean Payton and Drew Brees have been symbiotic. They have had a mind meld. They've been extraordinary together. Sean McVay saved Jared Goff from Jeff Fisher. So he obviously has been instrumental in that
saved
development. Look, at this moment, it's funny, the narrative always, there's always this story, well, who's the best team? Right now, this week at least, the storyline is the team to watch in the NFC is the New Orleans Saints, that they're the ones, and the Rams have now stepped to number two.
It's so hard. I mean, I guess you look at that because it's a head-to-head, and the Saints prevailed.
Head-to-head in New Orleans, I might say.
In New Orleans, correct. And in the Houdat.
Right.
Dome. But, you know, you look at the Rams, they were the only undefeated team in the NFL until yesterday.
Yep.
They had an 8-0 record, so obviously they had won 8 straight. So I would beg to say, not so fast, pump those brakes, because New Orleans, as of yesterday, won their 7th in a row. So to me, yes, they're on a trajectory. They haven't gotten off any track right now, and the Rams just did. But I would say New Orleans is maybe just a tad, if you're looking strictly at numbers, the Rams have done 8 in a row.
Yeah.
Haven't seen that yet with New Orleans.
And look, I don't think before it's all said and done, we won't hear a lot.
We're splitting hairs. These are two.
And we're
going to
get a lot of noise
franchises.
I think the Vikings and the NFC are still a team to watch. They've got a defense that's all coming together. Remember, Mike Zimmer, longstanding defensive coordinator, a guy who really had the Vikings defense fired up last year. That's still going to come together. 10 sacks yesterday. And then
10 sacks. Can you just hear what you said?
Yes.
That's incredible.
Thank you. The way I said it, or the fact that they got the 10 sacks?
The way you said it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little college basketball. We're going to get to visit with Mike DeCourcy. He's a columnist for Sporting News, and we're going to ask him about the outlook for the college basketball season on the Boston Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
Waited to the last minute to do your gift shopping? No problem. Head over to giftingmap.com today to see the amazing curated collection of gifts and gifting ideas that the team has assembled for you. Giftingmap.com, your map to great gifting. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, welcome back.
You're all skippy now.
Well, Monday Night Football and the Cowboys are moving. We're going to get an update from Jerry World. Bobby Belt joins us here on SB Nation Radio. Bobby, welcome into the show.
Hey, thanks so much. We are late here in the first quarter at AT&T Stadium. Cowboys lead the Titans 7-0, and they're threatening for more inside the five right now. We'll catch you up quickly on how Dallas scored its first touchdown. Dallas defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence comes up with a big strip sack of Marcus Mariota on Tennessee's first drive. Sean Lee would recover that at Tennessee's 15-yard line, and 4 plays later, it was Dak Prescott finding newly acquired receiver Amari Cooper for a 4-yard touchdown. It was actually 2 weeks ago today that Dallas traded their first-round pick next spring to the Raiders for Cooper. It's been a really rough opening to the game for the Titans. They fumbled away each of their first two possessions, gifting Dallas field position on the wrong side of midfield. And this next possession just started out with Ezekiel Elliott picking up a big 30-yard gain and placing the ball at the 4-yard line. Cowboys entered tonight a bit shorthanded. Starter Jeff Swaim at tight end and David Irving at defensive tackle are out with injuries, as is third-down pass rusher Randy Gregory. All-pro guard Zach Martin had been questionable heading into the game with a strained MCL, but he is active and starting tonight. Once again, Dallas leads the Titans 7-0 out here at AT&T Stadium, and they're threatening for more with about 4 minutes left.
Thank you so much. That's Bobby Belt on the ground in Dallas. All right, joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Mike DeCourcy. He is a Big Ten college basketball analyst and a columnist for Sporting News. Mike, welcome into the show with David and Carla.
Hi, David. How are you?
Well, we're doing great, and we're fired up about college basketball. Are you ready for the season?
I am, absolutely. A little earlier, I guess, than we're used to. This opening date that we have tomorrow is kind of a new deal. Usually the season had begun on a Friday, and most often the majority of the games were fairly low-key, a big power school playing a team, what we call a bye game, where you don't have to return the game to their gym at a later date. They come in, they play the victim, and they leave. That's what most of the openers had been before.
Yep.
But now we have this opening date, and we'll have the Champions Classic involving Kentucky versus Duke and Michigan State versus Kansas. And I think that that'll be a nice start for the college basketball season.
They're trying to grab those people before March Madness. They're getting a head start on it with those openers.
Yeah, Carly, that's one of the things that's always been a problem with college basketball is the lack of a pure opening day. College football kind of bleeds in that way too, but they have a couple of events and that get it going But obviously, a baseball has a huge opening day, and the NFL has a huge opening weekend, and all that sort of thing. And college basketball has never really been able to figure that out. And you add in the fact that that for some people, college basketball doesn't become an occupation or a preoccupation until they're done with football. I've never quite been able to understand the mentality of that. Like, okay, if we're playing hoops on Tuesday, you can't pay attention if you're a college football fan, because what, you're in your dorm room breaking down game film for Saturday? I never understood quite why that's the case, but it seems to be for some.
Well, let's ask you about some of the storylines coming into the season. I mean, obviously in a one-and-done era, there are lots of great freshmen entering college basketball this year. If you were starting a college basketball team right now, who would you most want to have on your team?
I'd most want to have LeBron James, but I guess you're not giving me the entire universe. Of the players that are coming back, that's an interesting question, because it's not an overwhelming group of players. It really isn't. I hope that doesn't sound bad. It's just that you just don't have the obvious, gosh, that guy just takes your breath away. The player that fascinates me the most is Zion Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I tell this story to explain why he does. When I went to the summer tournament that he played in last year in Spartanburg, South Carolina, I got there on a Friday. The tournament had been going on for a few days, and they didn't have any rosters left. So I saw that his team was playing pretty much almost at the same time I walked in. So I hustle over to the court where he's playing, and I'm trying to figure out which one he is. Now, I'd seen him on tape with all the YouTube dunks and all that. And so I look on the court trying to figure out which one he is, what number or whatever. And I see this one guy, and I'm like, well, that can't be him. He's too big to do the things that I've seen on tape. That's not possibly him. The guy's enormous. And it was him. Because, I mean, he is the biggest, most dynamic big man that I've ever seen. I mean, he flies above the rim, and he's a tank. It's just the most ridiculous combination of size and dynamism and power. And so it does all that add up to a great high-level basketball player? I kind of think it will, but I think it'll be interesting to see how.
We're speaking with Mike DeCourcy from Sporting News, also studio analyst at the Big Ten Network, talking about Zion Williamson, keeping with Duke, Mike. So Coach K, good news is he's got Zion Williamson on his roster. Bad news is probably are we going to not have Zion Williams after a year?
Oh, definitely. I mean, almost definitely. Yeah. Certainly he will not, unless something terrible goes on, injury or something. So let's hope he doesn't. In all reality, Zion's a great kid, a solid young man. I got a chance to spend some time with him on that day that I visited Spartanburg, and he was a lovely young man. So I hope it all works out great for him. But that's the way college basketball has been for a while now. And you know what amazes me is the Rice Commission that was formed after the FBI investigation and the arrest of several assistant coaches and all that. I mean, they basically did everything they could to chase the one-and-done age limit rule out of basketball. And they did everything they could, and I think it'll eventually succeed. And the people who support that, which is, by the way, a foolish idea, a foolish endeavor to do that. But the people who support it think that when it's gone, everybody's going to go back to playing 4 years in college. They're not. There'll still be guys who come and play 1 year. It just won't be the ones like Zion or mm-hmm. Greg Oden or Kevin Durant. I mean, those guys just probably mostly won't show up. And then instead, you'll still have the usual flood of Chris Bosches and Corey Maggette's and Luol Deng's. They'll still do that. So you're not making the game better by chasing those players out. You're making the game worse on all levels.
That's a great point. That's a great point, Mike. Question, speaking of investigations, I have to quickly ask you, former Louisville head coach Rick Pitino, is he going to coach again at the college level or talk now of the NBA level?
You know, when he left Louisville last year, I said that some of it will depend on what the NBA's approach to him is. And certainly he's as good a basketball mind as there is, as there ever has been. But will he, you know, he's been used to being the king for almost 25, 30 years now. He hasn't really had a real boss since the early days at Kentucky. And once he, you know, even though he certainly respected C.M. Newton, once he reached a high level, at a certain point, you know, he sort of was in charge of his own thing. And if he wasn't happy, you know, they were going to try to make him happy. And then we went to Boston and now in Louisville. So he hasn't had a boss. So do the people who will be the bosses, the GMs and the VPs of player personnel or whatever their title are, will they believe that Rick will work for them instead of working for Rick? And I don't know that there will be somebody out there who will feel comfortable with that. And then in terms of college, I think some of that is somewhat dependent on where he's willing to coach. He's been at the highest level for 30 years, not since he left UMass, has he had to, Boston U, has he had to sort of work at the lower stages of the game or the middle stages of the game. And I'm not sure whether he'd be willing to do that. I don't know he'd have to go all the way off Broadway. But would he be willing to coach somewhere and say in the American Conference? I don't know whether he would.
We're talking to Mike DeCourcy. He's a columnist for Sporting News. Okay, Mike, you mentioned the FBI investigation and all the work that was done last year. Is college basketball cleaner and more in the straight and narrow after all that work?
Honestly, I don't think so. I don't think that it's really slowed down that much. That people that I talk to don't feel that it has. The ones that are actually in the recruiting game that are either really closely observing it or actually fighting against those people. I don't think it's changed that much. And I don't know that. See, the problem is that although certainly the stakes have changed now, that people might go to prison for involvement in things that in the past had only been considered to be NCAA violations. People might now go to prison. I don't know whether that's necessarily going to dissuade anybody who feels that they need the edge or that they want the edge. If prison were a complete deterrent, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems that we have in America or the world. So I don't know that that's going to necessarily chase the people out of the game who prefer or don't mind breaking the rules.
So, Mike, tomorrow we're going to see number one Kansas taking on number 10 Michigan State in the opening night. Let's take a look at Kansas. So they've won a mind-blowing 15 conference titles in a row. Is there anybody in the Big 12 that can make that streak come to an end? And based on national championship tally, do you think Bill Self is underachieving as the coach of the Jayhawks?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, you don't win. The statement you just made, 14, 15 Big 12 championships in a row, you can't do that and underachieve. He's made, I think, three Final Fours now. He's performed in the tournament everywhere he's been, from Tulsa Elite Eight to Illinois Elite Eight, and now Kansas. I think he's a tremendous coach, and obviously, what we were just discussing, he's got a player whose name and was mentioned and whose guardian was mentioned during the trial that just completed a couple of weeks ago, and who therefore isn't playing as they investigate whether he's eligible, Silvio De Sousa. So that'll impact their team a little bit, but they still have a loaded roster. I think Kansas State could. It's not inconceivable to me that Kansas State's terrific, and I could see them perhaps grabbing a share of the conference title, for instance. But that 14 in a row that Kansas has now, that's not 14 outright. There have been two or three in there where somebody shared it, mm-hmm. but Kansas was always one of them. Kansas was always a part of it. And I could see the Wildcats at K-State getting a share, but I can't see them overtaking KU to knock them completely off that perch.
Mike, we've got about a minute left. We've talked about a lot of longstanding successful coaches like Coach K and Bill Self. Who's a young and up-and-coming coach that you'd like to highlight?
Well, a year ago we picked Mick Cronin at Cincinnati as our National Coach of the Year, and that award doesn't always get the attention that it deserves because it's right in the middle of everybody's trying to get a tournament bid and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that Mick did an unbelievable job at Cincinnati when everybody else that was in the American Conference was really struggling to maintain their grip on their program. And we saw Memphis go down and coaching changes there. And we saw UConn go down, and Kevin Ollie lose his job 4 years after winning a national championship, and Temple fell down, and this will be Fran Dunphy's last year at Temple. But Mick was able to not only keep Cincinnati relevant for, I think they've made 8 or 9 consecutive NCAAs, but also to get all the way up to a number 2 seed. I don't think he got enough recognition for being able to accomplish that.
Fair enough. That's Mike DeCourcy. He's a Big Ten college basketball analyst, columnist for Sporting News. Mike, thank you so much for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
David, Carla, thank you very much.
Take care.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So one of the fun things about that interview with Mike DeCourcy of Sporting News magazine that stood out to me is how the college basketball season usually starts very quietly, right? It's in the midst of all this other stuff going on, but not this year. They've really made a point that they're going to have a big night tomorrow night, Tuesday night, with two
big
great matchups.
Marquee matchups.
Great for college basketball.
Absolutely.
And great to have Mike DeCourcy on here. So Monday Night Football, Cowboys on their opening drive. They knew they had to get the ball to Amari Cooper, and they got an opening drive touchdown. Here it is.
We're going to do here on second and goal. He looks back to Cooper. Can he get in? Diving for it. His first touchdown with the star on the helmet.
Okay, so that enabled the Cowboys to take the lead. It was perfectly scripted. That certainly wanted, they wanted that out of Amari Cooper. They wanted to show that he was going to be good.
They want to cry at the critics.
They paid too much. And then second drive, after another Titan turnover, second Titan turnover of the night, Cowboys drive down. Dak Prescott on a 2nd and 4 threw the ball up into the end zone in the direction of Amari Cooper, who was double teamed. And Prescott should never force that ball.
No, threading a needle on that one.
And it was a pick. I mean, that is one of those turnovers. You know, Bill Parcells used to say, when you're inside the 10, you should never, ever, ever throw a pick. I mean, of course, he never wanted a pick at all. But that's the moment.
Who does?
Well, but that is a moment where Dak threw away 3 points at least right there. And he didn't have to force the ball in. Amari wasn't even open. And Dak threw it off his back foot, lobbed it into a crowd, and the Titans get the turnover. Turnover equation now. Titans have turned it over twice on fumbles. Cowboys have turned it over once on interceptions. Score stands. Dallas 7, Tennessee 0 with 14 minutes remaining in the first half.
So is that decision to you a young quarterback or is that coaching?
Well, I do believe that's – I'm going to put that on Dak. That's a pass that you learn in middle school not to throw. He might feel some pressure to feed the ball to Cooper, given all that's taking place, but he needs to get that one out of his system. We'll have a great second hour coming up when we return. In the second hour, we're going to hear from Lance Zierlein about all things NFL on SB Nation Radio.